Welcome to another episode of the Banter Pub FC podcast. It's the sauciest team in the game, the spiciest takes on the pitch. We have so many nicknames, but the important thing is who's in the pub today. In the pub today, we have Ama, we have John, we have Joseph, we have Adam, and we have myself, the captain, Neil. We also have Rossler behind the scenes, doing a damn thing as per usual. He has his hands up behind his head right now. He's doing a damn thing, y'all. Every week, he's doing a damn thing. We appreciate our entire team. Real names, no gimmicks. So let's get started and roll right into Around the Pitch. Around the Pitch is going to be different this week for many reasons. The first being that it's the international break, right? So there isn't a whole lot happening at the club level. There is in America, which we'll get to because the MLS schedule was released. So we'll talk about that before we leave y'all. But right now, as we get into Around the Pitch, there's a lot of things are happening at once. The Olympics are supposed to be happening this summer, potentially. The Euros are supposed to be happening as well. AFCON is happening. So all of these major tournaments are happening all across the world related to the beautiful game. And we're going to get into the AFCON qualifiers. We're going to talk about the UEFA Women's World Cup, which is also happening right now. And we're also going to talk about the UEFA World Cup. We're going to give you an update on the UEFA World Cup. So let's start with AFCON. There were several matches that obviously I think really stuck out to not just us as the hosts of the Banter Pub, but just in general, right? I think the first being Ethiopia versus Madagascar. And the reason why is because Ethiopia put hands on Madagascar.
I'm going to be disrespectful right out the gate and say, how did that happen? I know Madagascar is a smaller population country, blah, blah, blah. But Ethiopia is not known for ball. They're known for a bunch of stuff, but they're not known for football. So, yes, they have legendary players.
Yes, they do.
But no, you're not dominating. There's no way you should get dominated by Ethiopia if you're a footballing nation. So, it's back to the drawing board for Madagascar as far as I'm concerned. And big up to Ethiopia, you know what I'm saying? You get to play in AFCON, so, with the rest of Africa, so...
I mean, I know.
I will always, I'll always big up Ethiopia for staying uncolonized, because that's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tremendous deal, and the fact that they were able to do Madagascar so quickly. There weren't many opportunities for Madagascar. And like you said, Madagascar isn't really known for much. They have a lot of legendary players. But that country is just, when it comes to the beautiful game, I don't know. as a country, you know, when it comes to AFCON, they just don't they don't have it. Another match that I think drew a lot of attention and a lot of eyes is Zambia and Algeria. Not necessarily two countries worlds apart from each other, but Algeria is a country, and I'm going to say it. Algeria is in a pocket of the continent that believes that they aren't African because of how light their skin is.
I would say Algeria. The for me, the real thing is that Algeria is in a place where they benefit from the proximity to Europe and the ability to call on players from their diaspora. Like they were able to do that before a lot of other African nations were able to, because of that insidious relationship between Algeria and France. And in the power rankings, I think everybody would have expected Algeria to handily beat Zambia. But like, shout out to the Chipolo Polo, the people, the Zambian national team for representing, you know, the southern zone, and you know, making it a tough match. Like their group is relatively competitive, and I feel like Zambia has something to prove, and they. It's a good show. It's a good result all around overall. But like everybody, I think expected Algeria to win just because of the gulf in class, and you know where their player, the quality of players they have, and where those players play.
Yeah, people seem to forget that Zambia are recent AFCON winners. They're the reason why they robbed Didier Drogba of his last chance at winning silverware. So, so they got some skill out there in Zambia now. So it was a shock a little bit because Algeria has a really solid side, but Zambia they're there for upset of two. This is AFCON we're talking about,
right?
Yeah,
and this is you know this is the time for players that you know. Aren't really doing that could potentially not be doing great or are starting to show out in their club and they're getting a chance to go back with to their country and play with their countrymen and they are balling out of control. We'll talk about playing with their countrymen and where players should go. You know, we've consistently talked about that as it relates to the United States and we'll get into some of that later on. One of the other notable matches was South Africa and Ghana. That was a 1-1 draw. Another one, similar to Zambia and Algeria, where it was like you have two countries. Ghana are world beaters, not just in Africa, but when it comes to the World Cup as well. They usually shock the world. They've done it in the past. Not just the men, but also the women. And, you know...
They've won AFCON like four times. Exactly. Like they are a country I expect to do well every year, every competition because of the talent pool and the pedigree in that national team setup. I feel like they should win. I feel like they've probably I don't know the stat for real, but they probably have been in more finals than any other country. I may be wrong, but. If they're not number one, they're in the top three.
And the fact that South Africa drew with them, I think probably shocked them a little bit.
It was a home match for South Africa. It's a good result for Ghana overall. But like the problem is they're in that group. They're on the same point, right? Mm-hmm. So it really now will come down to who stomps
that last match day is huge.
Yeah, and who's going to stomp on the other two the hardest to get your goal difference up.
Here's the thing though. If we're talking about going down to the last match day, the AFCON qualifiers, then we have to talk about the tiny nation known as Comoros, the Union of the Comoros. For some reason, I'm looking at this table, and for some reason, they are right behind Egypt. And for some reason, Egypt hasn't beaten them in qualifiers yet. Let me give you a little background on this country, okay? They are Afro-Arab, 86% Afro-Arab. Their dominant religion is Sunni Islam. They are they speak French and Arabic. So I guess, you know, French colonization seems to get everywhere, girl. They are a population of estimated 850,688.
Small place. Really small place.
This is a country. This is a country that is made up of essentially three tiny islands in the Indian Ocean. Okay? And they could be on the verge of qualifying for this tournament.
No, they're qualified. They've officially qualified.
They have officially qualified?
Yeah, they can't finish lower than the top two.
First time in their history.
That's the story of the qualifiers as far as I'm concerned. That's amazing. That is absolutely fantastic. Like, I love seeing that. I love seeing nations that haven't made it to, like, a great footballing stage, whether it be regional, continental, or even international, right? And this, they have my undivided attention. If I find out that their shirts are drippy, copping. No hesitation. Like, that's just what's happening. Like, but yeah, I think in terms of your Ghanas and your South Africas, these are the sides that should be qualifying for this tournament. Ghana in particular, I think they have to win this. They have to find some way to win this. Like, they have kind of been in Nigeria's shadow for the last 10 years, if we're keeping it a bean. And
you're right.
As a resident Nigerian, I'd be like, Ghana has probably made more. They've had deeper runs than Nigeria in recent history, the last 15, 20 years. They've performed better overall. Like, they've gone deeper. Nigeria has been the drippiest, the sauciest, blah blah blah. But like reliably give you flavor, give you sauce, we'll give you players all over the place. But what we won't do is bring home the hardware when push comes to shove. There's always
neither will Ghana, because I seem to recall a very, very, very infamous moment in an AFCON final. And if we there was a certain penalty shootout that happened, went the full distance, everybody had a penalty.
Really?
And I remember a certain Andre Ayew was just inconsolable that night.
That man was hurt. Yo.
That man put in the AFCON, so he said, what day is it? Okay, cool. Still Oscar eligibility season? Bet. And he put the performance of a lifetime in to make sure that people understand, if I'm not getting individual honors, if I'm not taking this AFCON business home to Ghana, I'm bringing an Oscar home. And I have never seen a man cry so hard for so long. Like, I was genuinely brokenhearted. But after about minute three, I was like, if somebody doesn't get this man a glass of water and a fan, you know, play the church organ and let's see this. Let's wrap this shit up. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, yes, brethren, you didn't get it done. Heartbroken. I'm heartbroken too, because Ivory Coast stole that AFCON final. They had no business winning it, to tell you the truth. Ghana looked the more likely. They just didn't have the shooting boots on. And then the penalties, it's an absolute it's an absolute lottery. So, Ghana has to win. They have to win this one.
I thought you were going to mention the penalty in South Africa in the World Cup. I was about to say, you're really trying to people in that point.
No. Now, see, that was an injustice on a global scale. That was in the extreme. You know, That was, you know, and I'm pretty sure someone got called Negrito that night. But again, I have to ask my abuela to see if that's something that, you know, that I could, you say that's a term of endearment, you get me? So it's just like, you know, maybe if Asamoah Gyan got called Negrito three times, he probably would have carried Garner through, you know? It's a term of endearment, or so I'm led to believe.
On the Comoros qualification, I want to say, like, yes, that's awesome that they've done it. Good on them. But for me, it's like, I think they're taking, I believe they're taking a page out of the Cape Verde book, because they qualified, I want to say, was it 2013, probably. I think 2013 might have been the first one, but here's what they did, though. They went to the diaspora. Cape Verde, you know, is in the, you know, former colonial zone of Portugal. So they have players in the diaspora in Portugal that they could call on. And they did. And they started shocking teams. Like, I know for a fact that they beat Cameroon. Or, like, they beat Cameroon on aggregate. Like, it was one of those things where they beat Cameroon and made it into AFCON. And that was like almost 10 years ago. So before Comoros, you know, big up to them. But like, yeah, big up to Cape Verde for being the prototype.
Cape Verde made AFCON two times only, 2015, like you mentioned, and 2013. In their entire history. That is wild. I went to a Cape Verde. They had a football tournament in Orlando. This was back in maybe 2013, 2012. And I didn't know how big the community was in Orlando, but Cape Verde was definitely representing there. So, yeah, shout out to Comoros. I think that's an amazing achievement to do it for the first time in your history.
And to do it in convincing fashion as well. I think they have to take a lot of pride from that. You know what I mean?
Like, before the last match.
They've gotten really good results. They've grinded results out. They kind of remind me of Greece in 2004, because they were the amount of people that were so upset that Greece batted up the thing. I was living personally. I thought Greece doing that was just some of the most brilliant advertisements you could possibly make for defensive football. That's how you play defensive football right there. I mean, maybe Jose Mourinho might want to watch the tape. He might be able to sort Spurs out. But at the end of the day, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, well, Portugal took notes because they did the same thing in Euro 2016.
So I'll tell you what. They certainly did. And they were the ones to lose to Greece, I think, on the way to the final before France fell to them in the final, if I remember rightly. So, like, yeah. If Comoros can play that kind of style of football and continue to get these kind of results, they can go far in this tournament, and they can really, really, like, put themselves on the world stage. This is a country where, as of 2008, half of the people there live below the international line of poverty of $1.25 or something like that. So I'm pulling for Comoros. I want to see them go far to this tournament. I want them to have a Cinderella run, if you like. And I want to see how they do against other top opposition, depending on who they get in the group once the draw's done. So,
yo, bring them to AFCON, bring them to Nigeria's group. We will salute them and send them home.
Yeah,
That's the only a Nigerian can honor you and disrespect you in the same sentence. You understand?
Like, yeah, respectfully, we want the smoke.
Don't embarrass yourself now. Don't get caught in those famous last words situations.
Yo, like, we want the smoke. I don't care. We'll still outdrip you no matter what.
Okay, cool. So, everybody, man them. Note the time and the date. I have Thursday, 25th of March, 2021 at 8:35 p.m. Arma, the ambassador to Nigeria in these United States of America, has said that he wants the smoke with Comoros. He wants them in the group. AFCON, if you're hearing this, by some virtue of a miracle, make sure that they're in the same pot so they can get, like, drawn in the same group in it. Don't let me down. Because we want to be able to come right back to this moment when either I or Rossler takes this clip and we drop it in this episode and we say, Arma, remember this? Remember when you said this? And if Comoros beats Nigeria, brethren, you're going to hand me all of them Nigeria shirts.
When Nigeria stomps them into the ground, we also have to come back and salute my president. Right? If it was good for the goose, is good for the gander.
we'll see about that. We'll see about that. For AFCON before we move on.
Nah, I think y'all have said it best. It's just going to be interesting to see who ends up in those, you know, fills out those last 24 places for AFCON. Just because of the fact that it's been rescheduled, it's going to be interesting to see how it affects the season next season, because it's in the middle of the season. So all those good players, I know I'm sure Arteta's already trying to work on Partey to like, hey, can you like maybe not go, but let's be honest, your man's got to go. Like, if he's got to play, he's got to play. But that's about it, man. But these have been exciting games. There's a couple great matches to see on the last match day if you get access. So I'll be looking forward to catching some of those to see how things shake out, because it really is just a couple places left. So it's been a pretty good tournament, especially considering everything that's been going on.
Indeed.
I will wrap up by saying we should probably mention, just for posterity, all the teams that have officially qualified for the final, right? Cameroon, Mali, Guinea, Burkina Faso, Ghana, Gabon, Gambia, Egypt, Comoros, as we mentioned earlier, Algeria, Zimbabwe, Senegal, Tunisia, and Equatorial Guinea. They have all confirmed their places. They have all confirmed their place.
Brother, you're right.
Moving on. UEFA's Women's Champions League update. So y'all already know, if you listen to the podcast, you know I'm the captain, but what you should also know is that I'm a fan and supporter of Lyon in the French Ligue 1. I'm obviously a supporter of their women's team. They've done tremendous in the Champions League, and they put their hands on our Parisian rivals, PSG. Now, it was a 1-0 win. Usually those matches can be very high scoring depending on who's playing. I was excited with the result. I was elated with the result. There were several other big results that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about one of the other big ones in a moment. But what is everybody else's thoughts on Lyon doing so well? Obviously, please don't praise Lyon too much if you're not a fan. I don't expect that. But, pour it on if you must.
No, I wasn't really expecting it. I was expecting PSG to do the damn thing. But, I just realized that Lyon have Wendy Renard, which is probably my favorite women's player of all time. So it makes sense that she was the one that scored a penalty and did it big for Lyon. So. I don't pile it on too much, but I think it was solid win for PSG for
the PSG didn't win. Stop it. Adam, Alma, anything to add?
So I thought it was interesting because Wendy Renard is a center back. Like, how often is your center back your PK taker, like your go to player, like? That's part of her quality. We all saw her in the World Cup, and she could do everything. She could really do everything, and she had the stature and dominance in the air and in the in defense, but also contributed to the attack a lot. And so, like, extremely dangerous player. So it was good to see her in action. I had hoped that we would have seen a. I hope that Katerina Macario would have started, but it wasn't to be. Yeah, but like, I just want to salute the quality of these women's matches. That, like, if you were a casual soccer viewer, you could go there, you could watch these matches and be, you know, fantastically entertained, because the quality is really top tier. Now, well, that's the point I think I wanted to make the most about these matches.
Adam, do you have anything you wanted to add?
No, I mean, PSG has, I mean, I give credit to them, because a couple of years ago, the way Lyon was playing, like, it wouldn't have been that close. So credit to PSG for, like, starting to catch up, at least on the women's side. I know they still lost, yes. I understand. I'm not taking that away from you. Like, I respect it. But the fact that PSG, I mean, PSG in November actually was the one that broke Lyon's, like, 73-game unbeaten streak. So it wasn't crazy for them if they actually pulled out 73 games, and PSG was the one to break it back in November. So they're catching up. It wasn't like Lyon's still a better team, but it's not out the realm anymore for PSG to at least pull a result. So, you know, so it was there, but it was a good match. Like I said, the quality of the matches has been great. It's very frustrating to me that it's not so accessible for us to just watch it, that we got to be doing all sorts of tricks just to watch these matches. Like, in my head, I'm just like, if UEFA really wanted to blow this up, why not throw it in the package with, like, the men? Like, they did do it last, with the last semifinals and finals that were postponed due to COVID-19. They just threw it in. So it's like, well, why don't y'all give it for free? Like, at least from the quarters on. Like, maybe not the group stage matches. I respect that, maybe whatever the costs are, but, like, throw it in for free, like, blow up the sport some more, like give it some play, because, I mean, people are interested in these players outside of, like, it shows when they do Women's World Cup, shows when they do, like, Olympics, all that stuff, so why not give them more chances to see, because these have been great matches, and they're going to get better.
And speaking of getting better, we're about to talk about the Barcelona women and the Man City women. Now we have our Barcelona correspondent, and we have our Man City representative. So I'm going to let you... Now, listen. I know the Manchester United women haven't gotten to the level where they can qualify for the champions, for the Women's Champions League yet. But I took complete joy in Barca doing exactly what they had to do against Manchester City. Adam, Jonathan, I'm going to let y'all talk this out. Talk about the 3-0 result. How did it make you feel?
credit to Man City. Y'all have been growing. This is different. Yo, because let's be honest, like, for England, it's actually more of a race at the top. Like, it used to just be, like, this is one of the first years that Arsenal didn't make Champions League. Champions League isn't as big as we know it for the men's side. So it's only, I think, top 2 teams, or maybe top 3 teams for England, but it's not, like, the same top 4. So, like, we missed the mark last year. We did make the semifinals last year for the Champions League, or quarterfinals, one or the other. But we made it pretty far. Like, we're a good team. We have some really good players, but just shows you the quality. But for Barcelona, they've been rolling, like, what they've been doing in La Liga. It's just, like, they've just been rocking through. They have such depth that they have, like, such a rotation. Like, there are people that can come off the bench that give the spark. So it's going to be interesting to see how it goes on. I'm thinking if the draw goes a certain way, hopefully it's, you know, they see see Lyon in a final. But, man, they looked really good. Asisat was just woman of the match. She got the first goal. She drew the penalty for the second goal. It was never really in doubt. Thank you, Man City, for keeping Rose Lavelle on the bench till the 70th minute. You guys, I guess, don't have any faith. He brought her all the way over there, and just for her to just relax. So that's cool. Get rested for the Olympics. That's nice. That's, I appreciate it. Like, training sessions, but not too hard. So thanks a lot for that. So, but it was a good match. Like, best part of Barca's week.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have no hatred for Barcelona, obviously. We were part of the Barcelona Supporters Club when they were stomping Manchester United on the men's side in Champions League, multiple Champions League finals. So I got nothing but love for folks in Catalonia. I Barcelona on the men women's side are world class, clearly. So I'm not surprised at the result. Yeah, Rose Lavelle's on the bench. We have like the Pep Guardiola mentality on the women's side, where like our managers overthinks things a lot, and it shows. Like to leave one of our best players on the bench is saying a lot. So it's not surprised that Barcelona was gonna whoop on us in this way. So just like you're saying, we're building up for England is building up their level of talent. Hopefully next year we'll make a better challenge, but this year wasn't meant to be. Quarterfinals. In the quarterfinals again. Manchester City quarterfinals. I don't know what it is.
I mean, hey. Jonathan said it best. I will say nothing else. Moving on. Let's get into the World Cup qualifiers, gentlemen. There were several. I think I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the under 23 U.S. men versus the under 23 Mexican national team. Apparently, if you talk to some U.S. Men players, apparently the altitude of Guadalajara is why they were nutmegged so many times. I didn't know they grew nutmegs in Guadalajara, but there were several grown on the pitch that night. Several. It was bad. It was bad. It was bad. Those under 23 boys were. It was not a pretty sight, y'all. It was not a pretty sight. I know that there are other podcasts that are going to praise the U.S. men, and no matter what age they are, and wax poetic about how awesome it was to see them go into Guadalajara and keep it close. But that's not this podcast. Not at all. We're not going to, beat around the bush when it comes to any U.S. team, except for the women. So, because
the ladies have actually earned their stripes. They have actually earned the right to actually walk into matches and expect to win. Whereas, on the men's side of things, they're still crying over fucking Freddie Adu and all the lost glory that happened all these years ago. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Like, it's, they only, like, I saw Opta, what is it? One of the Opta accounts that follows the U.S. men's national team. Talking about that, real name, Second Amendment Hazard, was basically back in the U.S. men's national team side. And how long it had been since he had played for the U.S. men's national team. I quote tweeted and said, so anyway, what's everyone having for lunch? Because who the fuck cares, bro? Like, you haven't earned the right to be called good yet. You understand? You are still getting better. Yes. All of these, what is it, like 50-odd American men playing in Europe now? Is that right?
I think so, yeah. A little bit over 50, yeah.
Yeah. So you're good. You're getting good. But the girls have been doing it a lot longer than you have, gentlemen. So you still have stripes to earn. It's just as simple as that. You can big them up and encourage them for giving it a valiant effort. But the footage that I saw down there in Mexico, bruv, you still got work to do on the training pitch. Like, how many times are you going to get nutmegged in a match? Like, for real, sir.
Sure.
Like,
so I watched this match and I'll be frank, I didn't watch it live. I did the recording, and that was the thing I said I was going to watch before I went to bed. And I fell asleep because Mexico was doing it. They were obviously the better team, and there were bright sparks, but like you could tell the American under 23 squad was not super gelled yet, and like, there was like, I one of the things I love watching soccer for is the midfield play, you know, kind of watching how teams possess the ball or choose, if you're going to play that way, choose to possess or press. And the way I saw it is like, you know, Mexico was just like not letting the U.S. breathe, and the U.S. looked extremely sloppy, unable to put a string of passes together. And I ended up falling asleep. My daughter woke me up and she was like, you know, you don't have to watch this if you think it's boring. And I said, no, I'm just tired. I will go to bed because it's not worth my time. We know the outcome.
We're all tired.
Also, we have to, this is going to annoy our captain, Neil, because obviously he supports Club America. But it must be said that Mexico are as good as they are because most of their under-23s are playing for who? Chivas de Guadalajara. I believe there's about 5 players. And chief amongst them, my favorite, Mayorga. That guy, you forget he's a fullback because he just gets everywhere, up and down the pitch. He scores goals like strikers. He crosses like wingers. He bads people up like wingers. He is, for my money, a complete unit. And I love him very much. So, the U.S. men's national team under-23s don't have a squad comparable to that kind of quality, and it showed that match. So maybe as they continue to play more matches and play together, perhaps, as they train together and build up camaraderie, perhaps. But the Olympics are literally like in a few months. So chop, chop, gentlemen. Like it's not going to be pretty when you get into the, and you don't want to get drawn against Mexico in the knockout phase because they will roast you. Okay, they're looking for gold this year. They're not playing any games. So,
well, I think my money's on... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, my money's on Mexico to basically remind everybody about the crop of talent they've got coming up in the wings. It's looking real good from them. Like, they've really been working on their youth system. And I think they've got another batch of boys that... I mean, they've been shipping players to Europe regularly. Like, they've been doing this for almost 100 years. Like, it's just... It's nothing to Mexico. They're like, what? World-class talent? Wait there, fam. Like, it's just, they don't even sweat. You understand? So I am looking for the U.S. men's national team, really and truly, as we've said time and again on the show, to get it together. You know what it's going to take to develop a cultivate a level of talent. For the men, this is the first time they've had this many American products in a European system, which, as standards go, that is basically the gold standard. So you'd still have to do that and cultivate that on the youth end domestically, like most countries do. You hadn't done it yet. So what's it going to be?
I mean, we'll talk about it when we cover USA versus Jamaica. That's the exact point, that the US team is quality now because a lot of the players are going through Europe, which is what Jürgen Klinsmann asked to do years ago and was berated for it. But, you know, we won't speak on that. It's going to be interesting how the under-23 turns out, because I think a big bulk of it, you know, the excuse they use for Guadalajara is that high altitude. Well, they're going to be going to the Olympics with no fans. So I wonder if they're going to use that as an excuse if they bow out early too. But we'll see. We'll see. Maybe they were too distracted by the drippiness of Mexico's kit, because
We'll talk about that. Shout out to World Soccer Shop for sending me that email, because I was ready to go ahead and throw my entire wallet at my iPad when I pulled up that email. Like, that is beautiful.
Wonderful. All right.
I'm good.
But, yo, what the people are going to say is that, you know, a lot of other podcasts are going to say, well, you know, that wasn't the U.S. best team, because some of the people that would qualify to be on the under-23 team were playing for the senior national team. They didn't leave Europe because of their respective countries' restrictions. So we do have, or I should say the United States is going to say, well, we might have had a better match if those players were involved. So, yeah, okay. But going on, I mean, if you look at it, the United States men's national team, Jürgen Klinsmann was right. Like, I always agreed with him. His in-game managing style left much to be desired, but his personnel management made a lot more sense, and it's proving true. as Joseph alluded to, in terms of Mexico, Mexico in investing in their domestic like youth programs, you get a lot more chemistry because these kids play together longer. Like, it's not like kind of like America does its soccer training, like it does its capitalism. It outsources its development and then it brings it back when it needs it. So like, so those kids don't gel. Like, I mean, and it's true. So, I mean, honestly, Berhalter, I was watching the, and I know Jonathan alluded to, we're going to talk about that U.S. match, but he alluded to it. We were talking about it offline, too, that he said that he's going to leave the players that would qualify for the Olympics if they do make it. Like, he's going to leave them off the Gold Cup roster. So, you know, the U.S. people, the pro-U.S. people are going to say, yeah, well, that wasn't our best team, so I still want to give us a chance, to, you know, with Second Amendment over there and John Brooks added on. All those kind of guys, Josh Sargent, who had a great game today, like, they played well. So we'll see, but I don't believe it. I think Mexico, of course, without, you know, you got the overage exemption. Mexico has kids that weren't even on their team today that could make it, so... I do agree Mexico is still king of CONCACAF, but kudos to the United States by only losing by one after getting kind of embarrassed, in all honesty.
Amma, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, as far as like traveling and quarantine, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's a global pandemic. Everybody's affected. And as far as development of the youth program, I agree that Mexico has a much stronger pedigree in youth development. Like, you know, I you know, you heard me tooting, waving my Nigerian flag, tooting the Nigerian horn. Under 16, under 15, no nation on earth has won more World Cups than Nigeria. And what I was going to say about that is, like, we've met Mexico at youth level several times in those World Cups. And I'd say under 16 doesn't matter as much as under 20. And Mexico at under 20 level is pretty impressive. That's where, so I think the German team that won the World Cup gelled at under 20 level, right? A majority of those players played together. So that's what Mexico tends to do. They tend to build their squad, their national, the full national team, with players who have grown together, played together since they were kids. And sometimes it really pays dividends on the field. And I expect that the U.S. will remain behind, especially since we cannot forgive or forget the U.S. Soccer Foundation's dismal handling of racism and quote-unquote diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's going to be a pox on that house until you do right by the athletes and kids who are priced out of the game here in the United States.
I was just about to add that, to tell you the truth. Amma has said it time and again from season one all the way up to now. It's quite simple. The pay-to-play system must get abolished if the U.S. men's national team, yes, the U.S. men's national team in particular, is to improve. There are a whole bunch of talented youngsters that you have frozen and priced out of your talent pool, which renders your national youth infrastructure completely and totally useless. Like, you have to open it up. You've got to open it up. And if you don't do that, then you can expect your development to kind of move at this trajectory for another 50 years. So maybe in like 2050, we'll see you in a World Cup quarterfinal again. Maybe. I don't know. But I'm with Arm on this. You can't really encourage the improve. You can encourage the lads, but you can't really encourage it past a realistic point because we are still at the limits of what the US, you know, talent infrastructure can produce. So, yeah.
And speaking of opening up, we're going to transition quickly to the rest of the world before we come back to the senior U.S. team in their recent match against the Reggae Boys of the Jamaican national team. We're going to talk about opening up. We're going to talk about Turkey opening up on the Dutch national team. You want to talk about an opening up? Let's talk about an opening up, okay? Let's talk about an opening up, because Turkey, again, we were just talking about AFCON earlier, right? We were talking about countries worlds apart. Turkey does have talent. Don't get me wrong. They have tons of talent. They have tons of world-class players. But the Netherlands? We're talking about a Dutch national team that has had a history, okay, of not only world-class players, but some of the greatest players in the Beautiful Games history, period, okay? They have literally written the book on what it takes to excel in the Beautiful Game, right? This is a Netherlands side that got turned over and specked. The cheeks were opened up, and Turkey put hands on.
Shout out Cheek City FC.
Cheek City FC, baby. Let's go.
You know what? The people aren't even ready for that. But you're absolutely right. Netherlands got that work from a Turkish side that really and truly was not playing any games. You understand? In terms of cheeks, they basically said, you know, we're going to need you to bite into this real quick while we go ahead and do what it is that we do. You understand? Next thing you know, as Adam was saying during one of our discussions earlier, what did he say? He said that it was 3-1 by the time he looked up. Like, it was just like, by the time he came back to the match, it was 3-1 Turkey. They weren't playing any games. They were Netherlands were comprehensively beaten. But as Jonathan said that night, that's what you get when you hire Frank de Boer. You know what I mean? That is what happens to you. Ask Crystal Palace. I'm pretty sure they can give you a great idea of what it's like to be managed by Frank de Boer. It seems like it's him. I don't know. It can't be the players, because look at the Dutch talent that they put through, particularly through that Ajax side that did gangbusters in the Champions League a couple seasons ago. Like, they've got talent. You understand?
But the management starting. They both are starting. The two players that went for 50 plus, Dilit, De Jong, both are there.
Still there. So, like, my main thing is I look at all the managers they have had, how close they've gotten with those managers. So obviously Louis van Gaal, Ronald Koeman was another that they had in there for their, was it Marco van Basten was their manager for a little bit. And now Frank de Boer. I know I'm missing one major name, but it just seems to me that it's not the talent pool. It's not the way that they generate
talent. No, it's definitely not the talent pool. Look, they had Van de Beek was on the bench. Bergwijn didn't feature at all. I think late in the match he put on Van Aanholt. Like, I will say that, I don't know. There was some weird Malin and Depay. I don't know. I don't know that. Anyway, I'll say that Daniel Malin didn't have a good game. He had a couple, it could have been closer. The scoreline shouldn't have been this terrible, but it really was. They made chances, but they were not good. Tim Krul should probably hang it up. I don't know, man. It was a very poor showing. Very poor showing. I also watched a chunk of this one, and I was embarrassed for the Netherlands. So big up the captain of Turkey getting his hat trick against the Netherlands.
And we will be remiss for all the praise that we've lavished on Lille this second season in the Banter Pub. We'd be remiss to not shout out that man there that scored the hat trick. He plays for Lille, and I believe he is he Johnson? Is he Lille's top scorer? If I'm not mistaken,
I'll double check, but I believe he is. Barak Yilmaz.
That man had a fantastic showing, and it's definitely not a fluke, because he's been like that all season long in domestic club play. So, big props to him.
He's tied with Neil's boy, the Canadian Messi, David.
The Canadian Messi. Shout out. Shout out. anyway, I don't understand how Frank de Boer is the Netherlands manager. The Netherlands manager when Ruud Gullit is right there, guys.
Right,
he's right there, y'all. Like Ruud Gullit is literally one of the greatest Dutch players in the history of in the history of the game. Period. Period. Right. They lost their opportunity with Jonathan Cruyff because may he rest in peace. He passed in 2016. But you have the opportunity with Ruud Gullit. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. I'm sorry, Adam.
Frank de Boer's permanent title should just be interim manager. He should not be around anybody. He should just be like, oh, you're here as a presence. They can like maybe sell some tickets, like, oh, hey, this former guy who he's like, that's it. You shouldn't be there for more than like 3 months. It's just like a holdover manager. Like, there's no reason to trust them at all at this point. None. So
none.
That's it.
None. Like, his next match should be make or break time, as far as I'm concerned. If he loses that next one, or he doesn't get a win, draw or loss, he should be out, as far as I'm concerned. But then again, people are going to say, well, doesn't that disrupt the World Cup qualification process? And I'm like, well, boy, like, you got time because it's going to be held in Qatar in winter next year. So, well,
yeah.
Assuming the pandemic doesn't have anything to say about it, because we are very much still in the midst of a global pansexual. So I just really need people to kind of temper your expectations here for what kind of spectacle this is going to be. I know Qatar are probably looking at the coffers and thinking, boy, we spent a lot of money on this tournament, and now people aren't really going to be able to come. it's like, yikes, bro.
They don't let people in. They don't let people in. No problem. Don't worry about that. Come next year.
Absolutely. They'll be, even if there has to be, like, you have to bring, like, a card that shows you were vaccinated, like, they'll still be like, nah, come through.
Yeah, I don't know if that card business is going to work, because the last people that they gave cards to, they took their passports away and forced them to work on the stadiums. So we'll have to probably temper that.
The global capital does not care. They're going to be going. So all the teams that qualify, they're going to be going too. So,
yo, how does crazy
have to qualify their hosting? So
how crazy is the schedule that you start the year next year because of all the postponements? You start the year with AFCON and you end the year with the World Cup. Like,
wild.
African players or players from the continent are going to be gassed after playing so
without
much.
Question.
Club without and their club seasons, like, goodness, prayers up for those guys.
Well, no, the World Cup is next year. The World Cup's next year, 2022.
No, so it's AFCON. They postponed it. So what we're watching now, the AFCON matches, are qualifiers for AFCON that was postponed that should have been this year. So they pushed it to January 2022.
Oh, I thought the tournament would be later this year. Like,
no, they pushed it. No, they pushed it to January 2022. So they're going to be African players during their club season who's going to leave their club teams mid-season to go play it. Because that's what, a three-week tournament at least? Maybe a month?
Yeah. Yeah, and obviously, they're going
to
win their bet.
And then World Cup, like, I mean, they're already still trying to negotiate how they're going to take a midwinter break to accommodate that. So it's just going to be a busy year next year, too. Like, these players, like, this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. We're seeing some players that might, who knows, like, burn out a little bit earlier than they should have just because of the scheduling. Like, that it was just this relentless this time around, but who knows.
Good Lord. Okay, well, I definitely stand corrected. Thank you for that, Adam. And now, 2022, that might be the year that the world ends. So, I mean, who knows? You know, it's just, we're just going to have to put that one out there. I hope Africa has a deep World Cup run, but now that I know this, I'm probably going to have to readjust those expectations, because that level of travel is going to be silly in terms of, but then again, is it? Because it really depends on where certain players play domestically. So, like, after AFCON, they'll be back in, say, a lot of African players play in the UK, obviously, they play in the Premier League. A lot of African players play on the European continent, period. Qatar's not that far. Like, it's in relation to, like, if you're taking a flight to Dubai for holiday, kind of the same path, you know what I mean? Like, you're in the same region ish. So I don't know. Maybe Africa could finally do it and be what, the first ever nation to win both their continental competition and the World Cup in the same year. Think about it.
You can hope and pray. It doesn't have to do with travel, more so, you know, they're going to be exhausted from actually playing.
Well, I mean, there's going to be, they'll probably have a 2-week break at most.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's going to be weird. But I mean, so, this kind of reminds me of what Wayne Rooney was talking about with having a plan for this, planning in advance for this. Now the pandemic set in, being able to kind of like take as much time off as possible to kind of like rest players. And this is probably what you meant, but yeah. Sorry, Arlo. Yep. Go on.
No, you're good. So, you know, there, you know, we were talking about resting players. We're talking about players resting. A certain player that has been resting for his entire Premier League season in Gareth Bale and his boys of Wales played Belgium. Do we want to talk about that result? Remind Gareth that
he was instrumental in the first goal. I'll give him that, and that was about it for him today. Like, because that was, like, I'll give him credit. He was instrumental in that first goal. Great pass. But then, rest of the day, pretty absent, and Belgium showed out. Like, KDB turned it around pretty quick, and that was it. Like, Belgium is a favorite for the tournament coming up. Like, you can't, they've had, you know, talk about youth systems. Like, that's a squad that invested. So you definitely see them going ahead, and they really took care of business, and shows that, you know, Gareth Bale is just like, bro, just it's time to pack it up, man. I hope this is the last of it, in all honesty.
Oh, I want him to go permanently to Tottenham and stay there for a while, take up roster spots, like chew up some budget. My only take on this whole thing is, you know, Tottenham Hotspur had one job. To train Gareth Bale so he could play for Wales. Give him, you know, and they couldn't even do that. Like, I don't, if that is not the epitome of being a bottle job club, I don't know what is. This man came out in the press and said, yeah, I came to Tottenham and my hope was that I would use the opportunity to get prepared to play for Wales while I'm not golfing. Like, this man, this man said, Jose Mourinho. I mean, it's serious. I mean, and it worked for a little bit, but he's obviously not up to snuff yet. So, like, what are you doing, Jose? He's train the man. Put him in the park, I mean, like you put the black players during Corona.
Here. He's just calling it. I can't wait till Beckham's calling him in. He's really coming in, man. Like he said it, Beckham said it this week with Inter. He's going to bring Gareth Bale down to Florida. He'll get all the golfing in he wants. Like, it'll be perfect. It'll be great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Mar-a-Lago is literally right there.
Yeah. Look at that.
Trump.
I mean, here's my thing about that whole situation. Of course, going to a club that Jose Mourinho manages at to get get fit so that you can be ready for the international so that you're going to get called up for, bad idea. Because Jose Mourinho hates international breaks. He's notorious for this. Like, he hates them. He hates letting clubs take his best players that he has at disposal to play in international matches. He feels that they're needless. Like, he has said that early in his Chelsea career. I remember, you know, pre-match interviews and post-match interviews where he's asked about an international break. He doesn't rate them. He doesn't rate it at all. Like, so that's, I think, Gareth Bale's first mistake. I mean, going back to the club is fine, but Jose Mourinho's there. If he had the opportunity to let every single one of his players drop from the national team, he would make them do it. Like, if he had that kind of power. Like, I don't know. I think Belgium did exactly what Belgium does. They slap kids. That's what they do. So, and that's exactly what they did that night. all of the suspects, the usual suspects scored. Kevin De Bruyne, Romelu Lukaku, and I think Eden Hazard, maybe? Was it Hazard? No, Torgan Hazard. Comprehensive victory for them.
Speaking of cheeks, City.
Wow.
Well, I mean, there we go.
Okay. I mean, what am I supposed to do except just go ahead and usher it on there, Neil?
I'm gonna do the best I can. Let's go right into, we've hinted at it several times during Around the Pitch earlier. Let's just get right into it. The senior U.S. national men's team played against the senior Jamaican side, a.k.a. the Reggae Boys. We have two born and bred Jamaicans on the podcast, right in the pub, right here, right now, in the flesh. No faking Jamaicans. Real name, no gimmicks.
Ting-a-ling-a-ling, school bell ring.
See, you set him up for that, Neil. What have I told you about feeding what is this man? Don't do it.
Please.
So,
I fight with dumpling.
Oh my god. Why?
Oh my god. I'm so tired already. I'm exhausted. Like, I'm fucking out of it. I'm reclaiming my time. Our time, actually, because it is me and Adam we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Reclaiming our time. Thank you.
Have at it.
Yeah. Adam. I watched it. It was actually 12 men in the studio at the start was like, yo, we don't even know who they have. He honestly said, like, hey, Jamaica is supposed to be a problem if they get everybody who they're supposed to. But this team wasn't that. Those players were resting because they have club teams that they care way more about than these. This was a friendly, didn't matter. So why are we coming out for camp? So, like, somebody started today that was in, like, the Jamaican or a Jamaican player today was in the on a team in the English, like, sixth division. So this wasn't our best squad. So it was all right. We got a goal. It was good. United States, again, that's what I was saying before in reference to the under-23 side for the United States that underperformed against Mexico. You know, some of those players that can't play for the under-23s were on the senior team today. They did look good. I'll give them that. Yeah, that was it. It was a scrimmage, six substitutions. It was cool. I'm still excited to see what Jamaica's going to bring in the fall for the World Cup qualifiers because those are the ones that are really important. And hopefully we're going to make it those guys that are currently saving themselves for the club seasons that when it's time to go, they're ready to go and that we do really well.
I am going to say that the scoreline was pretty much a foregone conclusion compared to the fact that the U.S. men's national team had to perform well in this friendly and Jamaica really did not. And it showed in the team sheets, as Adam said earlier. But shout out to Jamal Lowe for absolutely batting up the place with the inarguable best goal of the five that was scored that night. That was gorgeous. Even the assist was brilliant. Again, more nutmegs against... See, if you're playing against American men, just nutmeg the shit out of them. They clearly don't know how to handle it, okay? Go for the nuts. Go ahead and get them nuts, dingleberries and all. Just roast them. Just get them. Just, like, take them out. Because that's what happened when Jamaica scored. On real chip. Against... And then, of course, it was 4-on-2 at one point. And then Jamal Lowe decides to say, oh, you want to run with bomber clap me? I murder people like you for fun. And it just absolutely just like, it's done. It's done. I know with quality like that that's been added, it's obvious that when we're playing at full strength, we're going to be a problem in the World Cup qualifier. So I'm salivating. I liked what I saw today. They gave it. The scoreline flatters the U.S. men's national team, to tell you the truth. And I know other podcasts who are very pro U.S. men's national team and all that sort of stuff, will probably be like, I'll give it a rest, Joseph. And I'll be like, no, I'm not going to do that. Jamaica's coming, brethren. There will be a new second best team in CONCACAF, and it will not be the U.S. men's national team. And I cannot wait.
Anyone else have anything to add before we go to break? All right, well,
I would, but you ain't gonna like it.
Well, you can save that for our next segment. After the, please join us after the break. We're going to take a quick commercial break and come back with a follow-up segment. Then we're going to go into extra time immediately after that. So stay tuned, folks.
The goddamn sauce. 9 different flavors, same goddamn feeling. Share our passion for sauce and discover the full goddamn range at thegdsauce.com. Use the discount code TheBantamPubFC to save 15% when you cop the sauce. Boss up.
Thank you for sticking with us, ladies and gentlemen, and NBs. We're going to talk real briefly about an incident that was happened several weeks ago. No one else is talking about it. By surprise. Because, of course, we are. It happened in the German league of the Bundesliga. The club involved was Borussia Mönchengladbach, and it involved their under-23 coach. He was ordered to train the women's team as punishment for unsupporting behavior by the West German FA. So there's several things to unpack here. The fact that it is punishment to coach the under-23 team as punishment for some disparaging comments, I believe, about women players in Germany. Am I getting that wrong? I could be wrong. I have to double check.
I think it was about a female official, right?
Yes, thank you.
I think it was Ian, and the comment he made was something to the effect of women don't belong in the game. And that's why the FA thought that it would be poetic justice, hardy har har, to have him coach the women's team. Not, you know, like, so it's doubling the insult, thereby, and actually validating a particular sexist, patriarchal worldview. I it was just bad on all fronts. As far as I can tell,
the club should have just fired Heiko. If I'm being, they shouldn't even have. They should have just sent him home permanently. Like, there's no reason. The fact that they thought it was punishment, as you just described, Dama. The fact that they thought it was punishment to say you're going to now coach the women's team for several weeks. Regardless, the club should have taken the initiative and fired him immediately. Like, the fact that the FA stepped in and said, we're going to force you to coach the under-23 women's side is ridiculous on itself because of the comment he made about women have no place in the game. Well, you have no place in the game, and your opinion has no place in the game, so you should see your ass at home, period. Because how many times when women are playing in many cases better than the men across the world, do we see situations where their highlights are shown, particularly on Twitter or on YouTube, and the litany of comments talking about, why are you showing this? These women have no skill. It's only about the men. Now, most of the time, it's about these repugnant assholes who have random footballers in their avatars because they don't have the nuts to put their real faces on there, and they would rather put a random footballer on there when they make these repugnant misogynistic comments. And this man and this coach did the same thing, except he has a face. He didn't, you know, he doesn't have a random footballer to protect his anonymity. It's literally him who made that comment about that female official. So the fact that he went out of his way to do that, and the fact that the FA said, we're going to punish you by making you coach the women's team, as you already eloquated, Ama, was doubly repugnant on itself.
So let's add a little bit more context to this, because this also seems to be something outside of the West German FA, or known in its German language acronym. I think it's WDFD. Well, we say WDFD, but I'm sure, you know, the German phonetic alphabet pronunciation and all that sort of stuff will fall into place there, of which I do not know, and I do apologize about that. But it was a German sports court, actually, that fined him and also banned him from two league matches in the league that he actually manages in, right? Or coaches in, I should say. Then they ordered him to take charge of 6 training sessions of a women's or girls team before June 30th. So it's kind of giving me this like West Wing, Aaron Sorkin, liberal dunking kind of vibe. It's just like, ah, like Alma said earlier, it's just like, ah, well, you don't like the women? Well, we're going to make you work with them. That's like putting the cat amongst the fucking pigeons, bro. That's like putting the wolf amongst the sheep. How is that punishment? He's obviously not going to perform well in any of those matches that he has to coach in and train the
It's to the detriment of the women players. Like, that's the part that's so annoying. Yes. It's like they're not considered at all in this dynamic.
So you've got people like Alexandra Popp, you've got people like the vice president of the West German FA, who said that, quite frankly, the punishment was incomprehensible. So they didn't really have a say in the punishment that was handed out. It was strictly a court decision. But what it does show by that court decision is how systemic this bullshit is. Like, there are people who genuinely believe that it is punishment to work with women as a man. And that is something that is just, as the German vice president, the German Federation vice president said, that's incomprehensible. That's, you're not making things better by sending somebody who already is a misogynist to work with the people he hates. That doesn't make any sense. They don't benefit from the system because they're there to better themselves as footballers. And here is somebody who is actively invested in an ideology that says stop them from being better at all costs. This is weird. It's strange. Why would you even think to do that? That was never going to look good. That wouldn't even work on Twitter. The fuck? Like, I don't even... Some of these court officials really do boggle my mind in how they have such a binary view of what constitutes justice. So much so that they feel like a form of injustice can act as a form of justice in the end. And it doesn't, it's like placing the cart before the horse. It's really fucking bemusing. I am as disappointed to hear about this as I am to hear about all the other stuff that we talked about, like in the set piece with the wages for the NWSL players and things of that nature. Like, if we're not seeing a pattern here, then I just don't understand what else it's going to take for people to see this. You know what I mean? But there we are.
I don't know if, you know, the court decision that they handed out, if they're influenced by just the Hollywood productions, like a league of their own. Like, oh, just if you sick the man with the women, he's going to learn respect for them just because of their grit and determination. Like, ooh, magic.
Like, there's no crying in football.
Is that what that is? There's no crying in football. But maybe there's vulnerability. Like, is this like a Hallmark movie? Do they have that in Germany? Do they have the equivalent?
The Lifetime
movie? Exactly. We're on the same page. So, like, I don't know why they think it's cute. This is just terrible. If he did something terrible to women, like, whatever, get him training, get him some counseling. He should be fired, but he still needs to be mandated to do something in addition to, like, get some help. But, and if he rejects it, he rejects it, but he still needs to be exposed, but he still doesn't deserve to have a job even once he gets that. Like, even if he goes to the sessions, like, whatever, that should be part of your punishment too. But don't sick him up to be with a group of people he really doesn't respect at all until he even has some sort of exposure to how they or why they should be respected, because he obviously has a problem if he thinks he can treat them like that. So, need some education, but definitely doesn't need to be around people for a while, period. So work that out.
It's going to be it's to put a finer point in this for people who still can't see it from that that particular intersection in terms of gender and how women are treated as second class citizens. Let's go ahead and put it to a different dynamic. This is basically like the film The Green Room, where people seem to think that if you put a racist person amongst black people, he will magically not be racist anymore because, like, you know, he let a black man drive him around. You know, something like that. It's just like, you gotta give me a fucking break, bro. Like, at the end of the day, this is not how you fix these problems, because you are feeding into that ideology that keeps the viewpoint that women are second-class citizens by sending somebody down to work with them as a form of punishment. Like, it could not have been in a more horrible context. And honestly, it's not just the coach now, because, like, this is the other thing as well. The onus is now taken off the coach. Now everybody's looking at the entire system now, because, like, so now the coach, basically nobody remembers his fucking name because it's a bigger mess than even he made it out to be initially. So just, I really do sympathize with, the German women that are, you know, working their tails off to make something of themselves in the sport. This is an unnecessary roadblock for them. And yeah, I agree with everybody here. Why not just sack the bastard? You would be terminated in any other job for doing something like that. Come on now. Like, not just that, but you're looking at a civil suit and possibly maybe even a federal charge. So, like, just sack him next time. That sends the message loud and clear, I think.
Indeed. So, with that, we're going to take one quick commercial break and come right back with some breaking extra time news. So stick with us. We'll be right back.
The goddamn sauce. 9 different flavors, same goddamn feeling. Share our passion for sauce and discover the full goddamn range at www.thegdsauce.com. Use discount code TheBanterPubFC to save 15% when you cop the sauce. Hashtag boss up.
All right, extra time. Usually we give everyone a chance in these extra time segments. I want to give us all 30 seconds. If everyone has 30 seconds, football related. And I think, so I'm going to start the timer. And let's start with Adam.
Yeah, so extra time, just want to shout out MLS. I'm glad that they're coming back. It's going to be interesting. I'm going to actually try to watch games this season just because I think there's going to be a higher level of competition. Disappointing that DK is not coming back as soon as they'd hope, but glad he's doing well over in England. Supposed to be playing for the team today, but had an injury. But I'm glad to be back and watching that. So that's about it.
John, what you got?
Similar MLS related content. You know, the season's back and Orlando City SC, this is going to be our year. Alexander Pato, Mr. Duckman is here, so we about to ball out. So shout out to Orlando City SC, and shout out to the Chicago Bulls. We had a great, great trade deadline moves this season. So Vucci Man, the Vucci Man is here. It's a 10-17. So shout out. It's my extra time.
Joseph, what you got?
I am very excited. Thank you finally for releasing the full schedules, you cowards. So I can start planning my away days. I'm looking very much forward to having an MLS away day experience. Obviously, very much keen on getting my vaccination shot so I can make sure that I can experience it to its maximum capacity. Well, in even if it will be limited capacity to start with. But I am very excited for the Orlando City season this season. As Jonathan said, Pato is here. Very excited. Going to be linking up with Nani. Very excited about that. Papi's got the boys playing some good stuff. So let's be Avenue. Looking at you, Chicago. Looking at you, Red Bulls, New York. Looking at you, Sporting KC. And looking at you out there in LA. I am very, very, very excited to see what the season brings. So let's see what the MLS is all about. And let's see what the supporter culture is all about. I'm very excited to explore it in for the first time properly.
Ama, you're up next.
So I don't have a football related one. With the MLS schedule going in, I'm excited about Seattle getting a chance. You know, getting the opening game, a rematch. Against Minnesota. But it won't be till next year when my local area gets an MLS franchise. So I'll be more excited when that season starts. On the music side, I was doing yard work, playing old songs I had on my profile. And this album by Finley Quay came up from like 1997 called Maverica Strike. And it's excellent, top to bottom. It's electronic, but it's got some obvious island influences, and it's just a great listen. So that's my extra time.
Thank you. And I'm going to wrap this segment up by saying thank you, DC United, for hiring Hernan Lozana. Because I think we can finally turn this team around and be successful. A modicum of success is all I'm looking for. Just a little bit. Significantly better than where we were. Just a little bit of success. That's all I ask for from DC United going forward. Because I want us to get back to the days when we were bossing up the MLS and nobody else could touch us. So let's get back to that level, boys. And with that, thank you for listening to another wonderful episode of the Banter Pub FC, the sauciest team in the game, the spiciest takes on the pitch. Be sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the Banter Pub FC. Follow us and subscribe on YouTube and Twitch. And if you like what you heard, please, the reviews matter. Ratings matter. So give us those ratings, give us those reviews, please and thank you. Listen to the full episode as well. Please, full episodes. We love you all to death. Stay with us. We're going to bring you great content. We have some excellent content coming up for you, some fantastic set pieces. Thank you all. Stay up. Stay blessed.
Shabba.
See you next time in the pub.